Hello and welcome to Media News. Media News aims to be an authentic voice, bringing you real, truthful stories from the Middle East, with a particular focus on the Kurdish question that is often ignored, self-censored, or suppressed by the mainstream media platforms. Since the establishment of the modern state of Turkey in 1923, out of the ashes of the Ottoman Empire, the newly formed Turkish state abandoned any idea of granting the sizable population of Kurdish people living within the borders of the newly defined Turkish state, mostly in the southeast, autonomy or any rights of self-determination, as had been stipulated and provided for in the terms of the Treaty of Sèvres, signed just 3 years before in 1920. Then, following on from the genocidal campaigns against the Armenians, Greeks, Assyrians, and other Christian minorities living in Turkey, and after the signing of the Treaty of Lausanne in 1923, establishing the present-day borders of Turkey, Kurds were denied not just their rights of self-determination, but the newly formed Kemalist government now announced that any non-Turkish citizen of Turkey will be forcibly Turkified. İsmet İnönü, one of the founders of the Turkish state, speaking to the Turkish Congress of the Türk Ocakları in 1925, said, "We are frankly nationalist, and nationalism is our only factor of cohesion. Before the Turkish majority, other elements have no kind of influence. At any price, we must Turkify the inhabitants of our land, and we will annihilate those who oppose Turks or the Turkism." With this chilling statement of intent, the Turkish state now began a forced assimilation policy against the Kurdish people, who it is estimated now make up anything between a quarter to a third of the population of Turkey. What followed were massacres of genocidal scales, as the Turkish state labeled any Kurd who refused to abide by this new policy and forcibly assimilate to be a Turk, giving up their ancient language, culture, and history, as terrorists. And Kurdish leaders were hung and exiled, while thousands of Kurdish villages were burnt and millions of Kurds forced into exile. This has essentially been the Turkish state's policy ever since, and today Turkey are still destroying towns, bombing villages, criminalizing and jailing elected Kurdish politicians and mayors, and still attempting to forcibly assimilate the Kurds against their will to be Turks, and still labeling any Kurds who do not submit to their will as terrorists. These genocidal campaigns were, of course, also perpetrated against Christian communities who had lived in Turkey and the Pontic Greeks who lived along the coast of the Black Sea for thousands of years. The Greek Pontic community were subjected to genocidal treatment by the emerging Young Turks in the dissolving Ottoman Empire. A total of more than 3.5 million Greeks, Armenians, and Assyrians were killed from roughly 1914 to 1923. Of this, as many as 1.5 million Greeks may have died either from massacre or exposure. About 1 million were forced to migrate. I'm therefore very pleased and honored to be joined today by Dr. Nikos Mikailidis, who is an expert and specialist in the region. Dr. Mikailidis, originally from Thessaloniki, Greece, has studied political science and international relations at Pantheon University, Greece, where he got his BA, Boğaziçi University, Turkey, where he got his MA, and anthropology at York University, Canada, where he got his MA in anthropology. He received his PhD in anthropology from Princeton University and did fieldwork research in Trabzon, Istanbul, and Ankara. Dr. Mikailidis is a sociocultural anthropologist. His research interests include political anthropology, Hellenic cultural heritage in the Eastern Mediterranean, arts and politics, social transformation, collective memory, material culture and exchange, humans and technology in Greece, USA, and Turkey. He is currently working on his first book manuscript, which analyzes the remaking and revival of listening to Pontian Greek lyra music in contemporary Turkey and its socio-political repercussions. Dr. Mikailidis, a very warm welcome to Media News.
Dear Mark, thank you so much for your kind invitation and for your generous introduction, and many thanks to Media News for hosting me today.
Thank you so much. As we know, Dr. Michaelides, next year will be the 100th anniversary of the establishment of the modern Turkish state and also a general election in Turkey. Can I ask you, how do you see the Turkish state's ongoing military actions against the Kurds in northern Iraqi Kurdistan and north and east Syria in terms of Turkey's often stated intentions of expanding its borders to create a greater Turkey as described in the National Pact or National Oath, Misak al-Milli, made by the last term of the Ottoman Parliament in 1920, and of which Mustafa Kemal Atatürk said, "It is the nation's iron fist that writes the nation's oath, which is the main principle of our independence to the annals of history." Do you see Turkey's expansionist actions as simply an election ploy of a dictatorial president who is losing support ahead of next year's elections and trying to garner Turkish nationalist votes? Or do you think that these expansionist strategies are actually the long-term planned policies and strategies of the actual Turkish deep state themselves?
Yes, unfortunately, Mark, in the last 100 years, Turkish state policies against minorities, against the Kurds and other religious and ethnic minorities in Anatolia, unfortunately, have not changed. Turkey is currently engaging in what we describe as demographic engineering, especially in northeast Syria, in Rojava, in areas populated predominantly by Kurds. And what Turkey is actually doing is supporting Islamist terrorist networks in the region that are controlled by Ankara, of course, and they are being used by they are being used against the Kurds. And what Turkey is actually trying to do is to push the Kurds further to the south and to repopulate those lands with Islamist groups that are going to be loyal to the Turkish regime in Ankara. So this is pure demographic engineering. It is a crime against humanity. I dare to say that it is a new form of population exchange that strives to create homogeneity in the internal front and to take advantage, of course, of ethnic and religious cleavages and factions abroad in the near neighborhood. Unfortunately, 100 years later, the culture of religious and ethnic assimilation and border expansionism remains untouched and alive in Ankara. And we have to say openly and clearly that Turkey is an ex-colonial power that not only does not self-reflect and criticize its own colonial past, but it takes advantage of every current opportunity to claim former Ottoman lands. And this is a huge, huge problem. It's a problem of political culture on the one hand that has been supported also by the nature of what we describe as Ottoman studies. For those of us who follow Ottoman studies, I can clearly say that I truly believe that Ottoman studies and the way they developed in recent years in various European and American universities through the funding of different Turkish organizations and institutions, the Ottoman studies played a significant role in the reproduction of a culture of impunity. And we need to rethink Ottoman studies. We need to re-understand what the Ottoman state was and what kinds of policies it had developed towards the Christians and then towards other ethnic and religious groups like the Alevis, for example, and like the Kurds currently, in order to deconstruct this political culture of violence, expansionism, and impunity that is very dominant, unfortunately, in Ankara. So this expansionist ideology on which this policy of border removal, of border change and population movements is based. We need to deconstruct this ideology at all levels, in the hearts and minds of the Turkish people, and of course on the ground. And of course, we also have the inability of the democratic West to understand and analyze what Kemalism, the dominant ideology in Turkey, what Kemalism is, and also the tolerance that Western democracies have historically shown to this racist, Nazi-like ideology. The West has been deceived by Turkey many times, I think, in the past. Ankara pretends to act as a balancing power against Russia, Iran, and China, but in reality, it does not. It collaborates. Ankara collaborates with these regimes against Western interests and, of course, against its own Kurds in Turkey, but also in the broader Middle East. And, of course, in the heart of all this lies the fact that the democratic world failed to recognize on time the genocides that have been committed by the Young Turks and the Kemalists, genocides committed against the Christian populations in Pontus and in Asia Minor. And this, again, contributed to a culture of impunity for the Turkish state. Moreover, I think the entrance of Turkey in NATO in the early, in the late 40s, early 50s, and the geopolitics of the Cold War increased, I think, the impunity of this radical nationalist Turkish regime, because, as I said earlier, Turkey has always pretended that it somehow supports Western interests and against Russia, Iran, and China, something that is not actually happening. It's a myth, and we need to deconstruct these myths. Let me just say very briefly, why don't we see this expansionist Turkish policy unraveling in the first 30 years after the establishment of the Turkish Republic? The first 30 years were years of reconstruction after 1923, were years of reconstruction and rebuilding of state institutions. And of course, Mustafa Kemal and his successors developed policies of assimilation and homogenization with the goal of creating a homogeneous Turkish nation, as you very well mentioned in your introduction. So the first 30 years were years of reconstruction and rebuilding of state institutions and nationalist ideology. And that is the reason for which there wasn't much expansion to neighboring territories in these first years. After 1950s and up to our current period of time, 2022, the presence of Turkey, the presence of Turkey in the context of NATO also helped the state, the Turkish state, gain more impunity against its own, against the crimes that it's committing against its own populations. And then, due to the changes that we currently see taking place in the Middle East and generally global geopolitical changes that are currently taking place, Ankara is trying to take advantage of these geopolitical shifts in order to expand again its territories to Syria, to northern Iraq, but also against Cyprus, we shouldn't forget that, and also against against Greece. So, yes, there is an attempt, a serious attempt by Turkey to change the demographic balances in the Middle East and to control new territories. Now, regarding the second part of your question about whether this expansionist policy is an election ploy or a well-designed planned policy of the Turkish deep state, I would say that, you know, my answer is the second. There is a widespread theory among many Western capitals, unfortunately, that tells us that all this is happening because of internal electoral reasons, but I totally disagree with this with this theory, because this is actually a policy that produces real political outcomes. If we assume that all this is happening, if we assume that all this is happening just for electoral reasons, we see that it produces real political outcomes on the ground. Turkey has actually invaded neighboring countries. You do not invade a neighboring country just for electoral purposes. Turkey is going to remain in these lands unless it is pushed to move its troops out of those territories. So I do not agree with this theory that tries to attribute every expansionist, radical nationalist policy of Turkey for internal electoral purposes. Now, there is a huge question that needs to be answered as well. Where is the Turkish anti-war movement? Mm. Where is the Turkish left in this whole process? With the exception of HDP, the pro-democracy, pro-Kurdish political party, and some smaller political groups and networks, there is no other serious anti-war movement in Turkey. The majority of the population supports political parties that more or less support the policy of Erdogan and the expansion to Syria and northern Iraq. So I don't see that, for example, if Tayyip Erdogan is replaced by Meral Akşener and Kemal Kılıçdaroğlu, I don't see any serious changes happening in Turkish foreign policy regarding the Kurdish issue and its relationship with North Syria and North Iraq. So I would like to see a stronger anti-war movement in Turkey that should also receive some serious international support. So no, all this expansionism, I think, is a very well-designed state policy that is being supported by the majority of the Turkish political parties, with the exception of the pro-Kurdish HDP.
Okay, well, thank you very much for that long and really very interesting answer. I'd like to move on, while I have you here, Dr. Mikhailidos, with your expertise on the Pontic Greeks, and relating it, as you referred to earlier, as to the demographic change of the Kurdish population. So I don't know if you saw recently the Turkish Social Services Minister, Derya Yanık, on a walkabout in Adana, suggested in a conversation with a shopkeeper who was complaining about Syrian refugees, suggested that some of the millions of Syrian refugees now in Turkey are to be resettled in areas of northern Syria to block the formation of a Kurdish state. So as it becomes clearer by the day that Turkey's intentions in north and northeast Syria are an attempted demographic change of the Kurdish population for returning Syrian refugees, it brings to mind the return of history as was perpetrated against the Pontic Greeks, also, of course, the Armenians, Assyrians, and other minorities at the beginning of the Turkish state. But in your opinion, can we compare the genocidal attacks and racist campaigns against the Pontic Greeks with what is unfolding against the Kurds in north and northeastern Syria today?
Mark, the answer is absolutely yes. This is a similar policy that started 100 years earlier against the Christian population, not only against the Pontic Greeks, of course, but generally speaking, against every Christian indigenous community. Communities that have been subjected to a well-designed, centrally designed, we should stress that, centrally designed policy of assimilation, ethnic cleansing, and genocide in the last approximately 30 years of the Ottoman Empire, starting from the late 19th century up until 1923. And after the Kemalist nationalist regime was done with its Christian population, either through exterminating the population or pushing the remaining Christian populations outside of the modern Turkish state's borders, a similar policy developed against the Sunni Muslim Kurds and against the Alevis, but also against every other non-Turkish speaking ethnic group in the Pontus region, in the Black Sea, and also in Anatolia. I have to stress that in Eastern Pontus, there are at least three or four ethnic groups that speak different languages. Georgian language, Pontic Greek language, Armenian language, right? And of course, and the Turkish language that is being spoken by various groups in the area. So we have all these minorities and many more that were dispersed all over Anatolia that have been subjected to these assimilationist policies. But the Kurds, because the Kurds are a group that cannot be easily assimilated, the Turkish state has been applying a lot of violence and continuously. But going back to history, I want to stress that these policies of assimilation and extermination of the Christian populations of Anatolia, Pontic Greeks and others, date further back. It's not a recent invention of the Young Turks. During the Ottoman Empire, we have many pogroms against Christians and many attempts on behalf of the Ottoman state to demographic engineering and also Islamization. The outcome of this policy was conversions to Islam. And of course, through these conversions to Islam, we observed shifts in demographic balances and in the end, the removal of the Greeks from their ancestral lands in Pontus and in Asia Minor. It is very characteristic, and please allow me to mention this, that especially in the area of Trapezunda, in the Black Sea, after the Ottoman conquest, the first years after the Ottoman conquest, we know from Ottoman tax registers that the overwhelming majority of the population was Christian, and there was a minority of Sunni Muslims. And gradually, with conversions to Islam, this demographic balance changed in favor of the Muslim community. And we had many Christian Greeks who converted to Islam, and their descendants today still speak Pontic Greek, but they are Sunni Muslims. And this is something that I try to study in my research in the area. So we have a long policy of Islamization, conversions to Islam that changed the demographic balances and in the end led to the removal of the Greek population from Pontus and Asia Minor. But also we've seen the expropriation of properties that ended, properties of the Christians that ended with the so-called population exchange in 1923 and the signing of the Treaty of Lausanne. Let me add, and I think this is something really important that we need to rethink and discuss more. Let me add that most of the Greeks had already been exiled or killed before the signing of the Lausanne Treaty in 1923, which the treaty came to legitimize this genocidal and extermination policy. So the treaty, the Lausanne Treaty, functioned as a kind of a whitewashing tool for Turkish crimes, Turkish state crimes against its Christian population that are considered also crimes against humanity. And I have to add that the Turkish regime currently keeps violating the Treaty of Lausanne again and again, even though it was a treaty that whitewashed its genocidal policies. Not only whitewashed, but also somehow legitimized those genocidal policies. The Kurds currently are being subjected to similar racist and genocidal policies on behalf of the Turkish state. We see the destruction of their Kurdish villages, towns, and communities. We see demographic engineering, as we said earlier, and violent population movements, and of course, expropriation of Kurdish properties and wealth. Now, the main difference between the Greek and the Kurdish case is that the Greeks were Christian, and this made their assimilation more challenging and difficult for the Turkish state. While the Kurds are predominantly Sunni Muslim, and that's one of the reasons for which a segment of the Kurdish population supported the Ottoman state, and in recent years they've been voting for Tayyip Erdogan. But to my knowledge, I see that this stance is currently gradually changing. Greeks fought for rights in the past. They fought for freedom and independence 200 years ago. And I see that the Kurds are currently going through a similar process. And this is another important common element between the two cases.
Gosh, yeah. And I mean, I've always thought that the way in which the Turkish state have used the whole narrative and paradigm of Islam more recently, I mean, the Kurds were at a very strong point in their struggle, and suddenly it was changed from Kemalism to a kind of green Kemalism, where the state, I think, consciously, you know, used the whole narrative of Islam and Islamic jihadists against the Kurds. It's really fascinating. So just then coming to the end, Dr. Michaelides, it's Turkey have not succeeded in trying to solve the Kurdish question by military means and suppression in 100 years of the Turkish Republic. In fact, the Kurds are arguably stronger now politically in terms of awareness of their identity than at any point in history. So do you think that Turkey really believe that they can solve the Kurdish question by military means alone? Or will there have to be a point of realization that a political solution is needed? And if so, how might that come about, in your opinion?
Yes, Mark, your question actually relates to the statement that you just made previously. So, I'm sorry. Why do we have this violent expansionist, aggressive policies on behalf of the Turkish state? We need to ask this question, and we need to really understand why Turkey is behaving the way it is currently behaving. It behaves in this way because the policies of assimilation through Kemalism initially and then through Islam have failed. I think that these policies have failed. And Turkey has been using this narrative of Islamic Brotherhood in order to assimilate the Kurds and push them away from dreams of independence or autonomy. But we've seen that at least in North Syria and in Rojava, in North Syria and in North Iraq, Iraqi Kurdistan, these policies have totally failed. But these policies, it seems to me that they are failing also within Turkey. And we see a rising number of Kurds demanding either independence or autonomy, which I think is a very legitimate demand. Now, I am among those who also believe that there can be no military solution to this problem. And there can be no solution actually that is based on either Kemalist or Islamist narratives. Turkey and Ankara has been trying to assimilate the Kurds and Turkify them in the last 100 years. That was an absolute failure. And we need to do our best, especially the Western democracies, to press Turkey to start peace negotiations with the Kurdish movement. Unfortunately, because there is a serious imbalance of power between the Turkish military and the Kurdish PKK, Turkey will never accept to peacefully negotiate as long as it possesses this huge power against the Kurds. So I think the first step that the US and the EU should take is, allow me to say, to delist PKK and to recognize more vocally the Kurdish rights and press the Turkish state for negotiations. That's the first step. I think we need to delist PKK. Mm-hmm. I don't see it as a terrorist organization. It is an organization that struggles for human rights and freedom for decades, and it should be recognized as such. Mm-hmm. And this will provide the necessary legitimacy to this movement, and it will empower it to negotiate a peace more successfully with the Turkish state. I think it is in the interest of peace and stability in the region to delist PKK and remove it from the catalog of terrorist organizations as they are described by EU and the US. That's the first step, I think. The second important step, I think, is the suspension on behalf of the European Union, the suspension of the customs union between Turkey and the EU. We shouldn't allow Turkey to benefit from an economic collaboration with the European Union and have certain prerogatives when Turkey invades or threatens to invade other neighboring countries, and when it suppresses Kurdish rights and demands for democracy and some kind of autonomy or freedom. And I think we should end this Western hypocrisy, and we should accept that the EU has failed. European policies to democratize Turkey have failed dramatically. And actually, we can say that the exact opposite happened. So instead of EU exporting democracy to Turkey, what we are currently seeing is Turkey exporting terrorism and violence in Europe and in its immediate neighborhood. Yeah. This is a clear failure of the EU and of the Western democracies more broadly, and we should end these failed policies, which means that we should stop appeasing Turkey and put serious pressure on the Turkish regime through sanctions and through the isolation of the regime, but also, as I said in the beginning, through delisting PKK and removing it from the list of organizations that are described as terrorist.
Dr. Nikos Michailidis, Greek sociocultural anthropologist and expert in the region of the Eastern Mediterranean, thank you so much for joining us today to share your thoughts. It's been absolutely fascinating. And yeah, especially as I know that you have a little bit of a cold, and an extra thank you for that, for making the extra efforts. We're really, really grateful. And thank you for all the work that you do in support of the Kurds.
Thank you very much, Mark, and for the opportunity, and to the Media News for the opportunity you gave me to share a few thoughts with your audience. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you very, very much. Take care and good luck. Thank you. Bye-bye.